Back together again, you and I, Friday, May 6th, 2022, on Connecticut Today. Kicked off the show talking about perhaps the political chickens coming home to roost for the midterms on the issue of defunding the police. Landmark Legal Foundation attorney Mike O'Neill chimed in on the current U.S. Supreme Court abortion controversy, the leak, and what the decision possibly says. You just heard from Andrew's newscast there, a couple of carjackings in Wallingford, and crime is out there. You know, crime is everywhere, and you hear a story like that locally, and then you hear about this story nationally that I noticed a short time before I heard the Wallingford story, and this kind of ended up catching my eye here earlier today doing some show prep before we got on here. Heading into the midterms this coming November, crime is still a big issue here. And I know there are a lot of the crime policy wonks, you know, the experts in crime, of which I don't claim to be one. I never have been one. And I will not be ever be one, although crime has touched my family from everything from a mugging to burglaries to car thefts to car vandalism next to a loved one of mine who was killed, murdered while doing nothing but doing his his business while he was in the school years and years ago, 1978. So, yeah, I'm no expert on crime, but I have certainly been touched by it. My family's been touched by it. So you hear that Wallingford story about the two carjackings in the town, and the town is investigating that. And this here, and as much as my business, the news business, has been cataclysmically and quivering in their reportage over the past 2 or 3 days of, you know, what's going on with the abortion issue in D.C. and all that, there are still bread and butter issues at the table that a lot of people, and I know you may not like to hear this, a lot of people may not like to hear this, but it's the truth. You know, bread and butter issues at the table, the economy, inflation, crime, can I pay for this, can I pay for that? You know, bread and butter issues to a lot of folks are far more important than issues of, you know, abortion and gay marriage and stuff like that. Now, those are the sexy kind of issues that people can easily get lost in, the finger pointing, no, it's you damn conservatives, no, it's you damn liberals. But they better not lose sight of things like crime. And apparently, this story reminds me of that. NBC News, I wanted to start with this on a Friday, and we can ping pong around to a bunch of stuff. But listen to this and weigh in to a question I have coming up here. Nearly 20 House Democrats in D.C. So 20 House Democrats. So, you know, that's about what's roughly 1 out of 10 members of their caucus. About 10% of the House Democratic caucus is urging House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to hold a vote on bipartisan legislation to boost funding for police as crime surges ahead of the midterms. They get it, people. They understand it. So while the entire caucus is going nuts over abortion and nuts over what Ron DeSantis is doing in Florida, because DeSantis, you know, he ends up floating a piece of political chum out there, and the left takes it hook, line, and sinker. While everybody's getting nuts about that, basic issues like crime mean things to people. It just does. It does. Crime does not differentiate. Do you think any criminal out there, any dirtbag criminal out here in Connecticut, a juvenile, a middle-aged person, older person, male, female, do you think they stop and think, this guy I'm about to carjack here, wonder if he's a conservative Republican or an uber-liberal Democrat. Wonder if that happens. No, that never happens. Are you kidding me? Come on. Criminals go after victims. That's it. They don't care what persuasion they are. So you've got 19 mostly moderate House Democrats. Perish the thought, they actually exist. They're urging Nancy Pelosi to hold a vote soon on a bipartisan bill that would increase funding for police departments all across the country. Democrats writing in a letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. It was first shared with NBC News. So when you share a letter like that to a major network, that means you wanted to get out there. You wanted to have a little more oomph, right? You wanted to have a little bit more of a push out there. Quote, as national crime rates rise, including homicides, carjackings, and assaults, now is the time to support local law enforcement through the passage of bipartisan, bicameral, that means the House and Senate, bipartisan means both parties, bicameral means both chambers, common sense legislation. Why is this important? Read further with me, boys and girls. The letter is the latest sign the Democrats fighting to preserve their fragile majority this fall are concerned about rising crime and the defund the police message from progressives. Yeah, you think that contributed to the party's loss of 13 House seats in the 2020 election. Remember, Joe Biden may have won the White House. Donald Trump may have lost it. But in the process, Democrats lost 13 House seats because of this idiotic, this nonsensical, this dopey notion of defunding the police. And then you have people on the left that say, well, we don't really want to defund the police. All right, then what did you call it that for? Whose idea was that? Right? Words mean things. Messaging means things. Two vulnerable moderate Democrats, Problem Solvers Caucus co-chair Josh Gottheimer, New Jersey, and Cindy Axne, I believe it's pronounced, Congresswoman, with all due respect, I've never heard your last name, A-X-N-E, Cindy Axne, or Axne of Iowa, spearheaded the letter, which was also addressed to Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy and the top Democrat and the top Republican on the Judiciary Committee. The lawmakers wrote, follow along here, kids, cutting to the bone only weakens any profession. It pushes good people out, diminishes overall quality, and fuels a race to the bottom. That's especially true in law enforcement. To make our community safer, build a future with less crime, and save lives, we should not defund. Instead, we must invest to protect. There it is, kids. There's the buzz phrase you're going to hear for about the next 6 months. Other Democrats who signed the letter include top Republican targets in the November midterms: Chrissy Houlihan of Pennsylvania, Andy Kim of New Jersey, Chris Pappas of New Hampshire, Dean Phillips of Minnesota, and Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan. All moderates who are being targeted by the crazy left-wing lunatics in the Democratic Party right now. Defund, defund. Oh, my God. And here's the question I want to start with today, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. How did we allow a few screamers, some of the loudest nitwits in society, how did we allow, and it happens on both sides of the aisle, on crime it happens to be the left side of the aisle, Why do we allow the people who scream and yell some of the most inconsequential, nonsensical crap to drive the conversation in this stuff? Can anybody explain that to me? Who in their right minds thought the defunding the police was a good slogan? Honestly? Seriously? I know what happened with George Floyd was horrible. You don't need to lecture me on that. But for the love of God in heaven, or wherever he may be, or she, what are we doing here? We have sitting members of Congress telling their leadership we need to better fund police departments. Has it gotten that bad? Honestly, has it gotten that bad? Yes, there are bad police officers. Yes, there are bad, incompetent, corrupt police departments, many of them in blue majority cities. We understand that. That ain't difficult, kids. Okay, we understand that. Okay? But this notion that now you have the once great Democratic Party that stands for nothing now. I mean, honestly, it stands for nothing, begging their own members to vote to increase federal funding for police and local funding. How did that happen? How did that? Well, we know how it happened. That's kind of a rhetorical question. We know how it happened. We had leftists, many of them self-described Marxists, hijack the tragic death of George Floyd and say, well, here's our opening now. Here's our wedge opening. We can take a tire iron or a lever or something and just kind of wedge it in there, and this is what we need. When in reality, everybody who was approached by these jokers should have said, calm down, we'll fix it. Take your defund the police and go, you know, do what with it. A lot of people still abuzz over what happened with that leak of that draft decision in a Mississippi abortion case. A two-part story here, the leak itself and also what that decision said, although it's not a final decision, as a lot of legal eagles have been saying to chime in on this as we welcome him back on many legal matters from the Landmark Legal Foundation. Attorney Mike O'Neill's with us. Hey there, Mike. What's up? How are you today?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you guys?
Good, good. Let's take this as two separate issues here. Let's hold off on the legalese of what was said in that opinion. It's not final yet, but I'll ask your thoughts on what you think was being said in that, at least by the majority. But the leak itself, Mike, I was stunned when I saw that. There's now theories as to how it could have happened. I mean, everywhere sure. from a justice, him or herself, all the way down to, like, somebody in the printing room. What are your thoughts on that?
Right. Well, I think, first of all, let's talk about the investigation, first of all. The Chief Justice has stated that the U.S. Marshal Service, the security service inside the Supreme Court, is going to be conducting the investigation. Did not say that the FBI is going to be investigating this. It's going to be an in-house matter, at least at this time. I would assume that if it gets, you know, if the resources of the FBI are needed, the FBI is probably standing by to be called upon if there needs to get into some electronic hacking issues, whether it looks like somebody tried to hack into the system outside of the system and seize the records. So for now, it's going to be the U.S. Marshal Service is going to be handling the investigation. It is a closed loop up there. Actually, you know, I'm thinking about this. You're only talking about 70 to 100 people who could possibly be leaking. This isn't a massive government agency. It's not like the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Defense, mm-hmm. thousands of people employed. So it's a fairly closed loop, and I'm pretty sure that they have an intranet, not an internet.
Yeah.
So again, it's all closed loop systems here. So, you know, I've heard people saying that it might be difficult to find out who the ultimate leaker is or how this went about. I am guardedly optimistic, and again, this is simply my opinion. I'm guardedly optimistic that they will be able, that the investigation will be able to get to the bottom of this, and we will be able to identify the circumstances that led to this terrible, terrible leak, which has undermined the integrity of the rule of law, undermining the sanctity of the Supreme Court. It is really a really sad day for that in that regard. I mean, it's almost we have a double-edged sword here. On one hand, we can take a lot of hope from the decision itself, from, as you pointed out, the draft decision itself and the substance of that. It's a fantastic decision. But on the other hand, we look at the greater implications for the institution of the Supreme Court, and it really is a very tragic day in the fact that that veil of secrecy, that important, necessary confidentiality that those justices have up there mm-hmm. has been irrevocably shattered.
Mike, do you go along with the theory that you've probably read and I've heard and seen mm-hmm. that if it was a law clerk to any of the nine justices, that would likely torpedo his or her legal career if they are found out or not?
Right. Let's speak hypothetically, because again, we don't know who did this leak. You said, you know, assuming it is a person, assuming it is either a clerk, staffer or someone else up there. If it's a clerk, they are barred. They are attorneys. They would be, I would assume that they would be disbarred. I mean, that's pretty much of a slam dunk. That is a grotesque violation of your ethical obligation as an attorney. So I would assume there would be a disbarment. But you never know. If it's the left, you really don't know how this shakes out. I mean, could this person be somehow held up as some sort of avatar of, you know, all that is great and good to the left because mm-hmm. they were so bold and brave and that they released this draft opinion? From an attorney standpoint, I can't believe any attorney, even the most radical left attorney, could somehow find nobility in this. Look, as attorneys, we all respect even the person, everybody in this country, the lowest criminal in the world deserves representation. And all attorneys, hopefully all of society, recognizes that. You separate the representation from the client. And we all hold the ethical duty of confidentiality above almost all else. And for you to violate that, you should receive universal condemnation from all attorneys. And any attorney who does this should have no career as a lawyer going forward. Their career should be over before it starts.
All right, Mike.
And I think that should be universal.
Mike O'Neill is the guest. Mike, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Let's get into a bit of what that draft decision said. You know, as Mike said, from a conservative organization, a lot of people love this. People on the other side of the aisle are just seething in anger. What is actually said here? Mike O'Neill back with us after Traffic and Weather Together right here on WICC. Our buddy, our pal from the Landmark Legal Foundation, Mike O'Neill with us talking about what happened with Roe v. Wade this week. Nothing official yet, but there was the leaking of a draft opinion here. And, Mike, you know, it's interesting. I was online last night going actually to some left-leaning sites to get me on the hysteria and to try and see what actual...
Good luck.
Well, yeah, to try and get... And I did find a couple of, you know, progressive folks on the side with law degrees who admitted, even they admitted, that
right.
They're not all that surprised that a revocation or a reversal of Roe v. Wade might be in the offing, because even they admitted, of course, this one gentleman went out of his way to say, yeah, there always has been a debate whether this just read into something in the Constitution that's just not there. And he said, I've always thought about it, too. But where a lot of progressives are going crazy here, Mike, I found last night, is what they think is going to happen after this. So first of all, from what we read and saw of this decision, which we should, you know, stress is not final here, it should change.
Right.
Did anything surprise you in that?
Well, surprised me in a good way.
Well,
I was hoping, I read it, honestly, I'm going to be very frank. I read it that night when the leak came out.
Yeah.
And I read the decision, and I couldn't believe it, because I thought sometimes you read something, and this is for me as a constitutional conservative originalist, and it was too good to be true. I said this is an incredibly well-reasoned decision, well-written decision, utterly dismantles Roe and Casey, which are recognized even by the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg as really bad decisions, bad constitutional law, and for our country to have based such it's amazing to me that 50 years ago, seven justices of the Supreme Court issued this terrible decision that had decades that has resulted in decades and decades of strife and division in this country. And it rested on such faulty premises. And the premise, of course, is whether the Constitution has a right to an abortion. And Justice Alito, in his opinion, delves back into the time of the passage, the enactment of the 14th Amendment, and looks into the history of abortion. And abortion first of all, back in the enactment of the 14th Amendment, they realized that there were abortions being performed, but it was prohibited, and it was never contemplated to encompass the right to an abortion. And so nowhere in the Constitution do you have this so-called right to an abortion. You raise a great point when you talk about what the left is doing now. And first of all, what are they trying to do? They're moving away from just this abortion issue because they know they really can't win that debate, what I just said. They can't establish that the Constitution has a right to an abortion in it. And so they're trying to say, okay, well, now because Roe and Casey have been reversed or are purportedly going to be reversed, suddenly we're not going to have access to contraception. And suddenly interracial marriage is going to be cast out. Suddenly same-sex marriage is going to be on the table. Well, all of that is just histrionics from the left. Really, look, 94% of the American people believe same-sex marriage is legitimate, is permissible. I mean, I won't even begin to think about contraception because that just seems overwhelming. Interracial marriage, overwhelming proportions of Americans believe that interracial marriage is fine, and rightly so. I mean, come on, let's go. These issues have been settled. They've been settled. Abortion has never been settled. Abortion has always remained constantly disputable in this country. And furthermore, abortion is even more distinguishable from those cases in that what does it take? It involves the taking of a human life. In those cases I was telling you before, interracial marriage, same-sex marriage, contraception, those all envision choices individuals make, consenting adults make. What is this? This is a case where a human life is taken. So abortion is certainly distinguishable. That also, one final point in this note, is that Justice Alito in the draft opinion says three times, as clear as can be, that this is only limited to the cases of abortion, Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey.
Mike, just to finish up here, to go back on something you said, I was surprised after hearing this, something you mentioned, that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the late justice, who was a lion of the progressive left and is still lionized, and whether you agree with her or not, she had an amazing legal career. She was not a fan of the Roe v. Wade decision, not on the basis of what it dealt with as far as the issue of abortion, but the fact that what she thought the decision would do to discourse in the country, right?
Exactly. And that's exactly what it has done. What did it do? Took the decision-making process out of the hands of the people. And this is something, and that's what Justice Alito's decision in Dobbs draft decision does. It does not, let's be very clear, and this bears repeating as many times as possible. This decision, if it is finalized, does not outlaw or ban abortion. It returns the issue to the state legislatures for the Democrat process to play out. In other words, the American people who have long been silenced in this issue for 50 years. Keep in mind, before 1973, it was a state issue. It was a state legislative issue. Roe versus Wade took the decision-making process out of the hands of the people and put it in the decision into the power of 9 unelected justices in Washington, D.C. What does this decision do? It returns the decision-making power to the state legislatures. After 50 years, the American people will have a voice in this issue, and they have been denied their voice. Now they will have a voice in it. And so we're going to see, what are we going to see? We're going to see a patchwork of laws. Some states are going to be more restrictive in their abortion laws. Others are going to be more permissive in their abortion laws. So we're going to see a patchwork, and it's going to be federalism on display. The beauty and genius of our framing of our founding fathers will be on display in this as federalism plays out.
Landmark Legal Foundation is the group. Check them out, landmarklegal.org. And as always, we thank attorney Mike O'Neill there. Mike, good stuff. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
You too, Paul. Take care.
All right, there you go. So, folks, and I was surprised when I heard this that again, the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is being held, you know, is being honored still after her death a short time ago, is a progressive lion of the left and of progressivism and women's issues. She pretty much forecast what happened exactly after the initial Roe decision.